Over here, Andy.
Leave me alone!
Over here. If they don't let us play, they all go away.
Why are you doing this?
Are we having fun now?
Are you my best buddy?
If they don't let us play,
this is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast, where we are going to do Child's Play. Yes. Oh,
you're such a doll, Jay.
I know it. I'll be your buddy. Best friends till the end.
Yes. But it's a lie. It is such a lie.
I don't know. It was a little more accurate in the remake. But
it was.
We will get there. We are we're going to be doing the classic 1988 Child's Play that has spawned numerous sequels, and I guess still is going. And
yes,
I think the remake did fairly well. That there's another one in the planning.
I would hope so.
Yeah, because yeah. Hot take. I really, really liked it.
Yeah.
All right, trifecta. I did too.
As did I.
I mean, reviews as far as the ratings go from IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes aren't quite as strong as the original, but I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot stronger. I was a little worried going in, considering we had, like, it was a directorial debut as far as a feature film goes. Yes. The writing team was also untested. I was like, uh-oh. Every time I did a little research before watching the movie, it just kept going more uh-ohs.
Yeah.
Uh-ohs.
And then you see the CGI at the beginning, and you're like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, we were talking before as I started watching it, and I'm like, I hate the CGI already, but it's Mark Hamill's voice, so I'm hoping that'll save it.
Mm-hmm.
But
it does.
It does. And everything else saves it.
Yeah.
Like everything else.
And they made 6 animatronic dolls for that too. Yeah. So they did a lot of practical when they could.
Yes. Yeah. And it works better than I was expecting when I first saw it.
Mm-hmm.
There's that great scene where he's making the face, he's trying to smile.
Oh, God.
Which was hilarious. And they couldn't have done that with practical.
Yeah. Well, no. Well, they did. A lot of that was practical.
But
I mean, when you get into some of the more natural expressions it was making, then it was CG.
Yeah.
Yeah. The mechanical ones actually work out really well.
Yeah.
Well, when you look at the mechanics, trying to replicate the mechanics of a face, it's so nuanced. It's very hard to actually replicate most of the time. So.
Well, that's the great thing about doing it with a doll like Chucky is you don't want it to look quite natural.
No.
No, and they did a good job of combining the two, the practical with the CGI, which is something we talk about all the time, is we love practical. CGI has its place. When you work them well together, then it works really well. Mm-hmm. And this is a case where they managed to make that work, even though your initial impression is maybe not so good.
Yeah, we got to say, this was one of those pleasant surprises. I'm not going to say better, but just as entertaining in its own way. And this is what I kind of want out of a remake.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of got shoehorned into being what it is as well, because it technically couldn't remake and reuse the kills from the original film.
Yeah.
Because the original film was still, I think Universal currently holds the rights when they bought it off of MGM and to all the subsequent sequels.
Mm-hmm.
So when this one was being produced, which is Orion, this go around, and they're working like from the same characters and stuff, but they had to take a very different tact on how to remake this. And while
and
there's
they
still,
did.
Still but- some of the core ideas in there and the core characters, they take a very different path, and I really enjoyed that.
Ultimately, actually, in some of my research, some of the path is absolutely what it originally was.
Yes, it was.
It's Andy is very isolated. He mm-hmm. is very much alone. And the fact that the doll is like, oh, no, I'll stay with you, and everybody leaves you, and it's sort of, and who he mm-hmm. thinks is terrible is attacked.
The original, there's a lot of the original first draft in this remake mm-hmm. that wasn't in the final product of the 88, yeah. where I do believe it wasn't going to be like a serial killer.
Oh, it was the blood of Andy made him come alive?
Yeah. It is very much, the original movie is very much a slasher movie. Mm-hmm. Whereas I almost want to say, like, the remake is Fatal Attraction or Hand the Rocks the Cradle type of movie.
It's a Black Mirror story.
Yeah.
Like, it really is. It's technology.
It's Twilight
turning
Zone.
On you.
It's Hal from 2001, kind of, because yeah. it takes care of everything. It's her going crazy. It was Galaxina, kind of, that we talked about, mm-hmm. where she got jealous. Like, it's all of these elements, but it's all kind of based on the fact that AI, without the nuance of human emotion, doesn't quite understand what has to happen. Like, it's very focused on, like, that logic yeah. circuit.
Also a disgruntled employee.
Yes.
True. But I mean,
dismantling certain safeties within the program.
I love always that what did I write down? It was like the violent safety. Or like the violence protocol was taken off of a doll?
Yeah.
Like,
why was there violence and programmed into the doll to be disabled in the first place?
Yeah, and it would have been nice yeah. if they'd added something in that they also do military technology and they're using the same software. They're yeah. just disabling certain protocols.
Well, the great thing about that movie is it is a tech manufacturer, Kaslan,
yeah.
which would, I guess, would be
Apple.
Our Apple here yeah. in the real world. But they were a tech company. They were, you know, they mm-hmm. building home assistants and cars
and TVs, yeah,
TVs yeah. and all these smart devices, and probably did have some military contracts as well. And then they branched into toys for children that could work cross-function with all of this mm-hmm. stuff on a network.
Yeah, which is a great concept.
It was. Yeah. And there's all these wonderful little nods in that movie. The little cop car with the RoboCop mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah, okay, I'm glad you noticed yep. that too.
Which was another Orion film, yeah. so it made sense. Yeah. His glowing finger.
Yeah,
E.T. I mean, this did mirror E.T. a lot, yeah. where he's just controlling technology yeah. with his yeah. finger yeah. because it's all Kaslan product.
Yeah. 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 But mind you,
it was hokey but funny.
It was, but that's the great thing about Child's Play. It is meant to be a riff on a particular genre, yeah. the slasher genre, whereas this one still takes that tongue-in-cheek approach. But
without going over the top.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. Chucky doesn't start bad.
Well,
you're actually pretty sympathetic for him.
It yeah. does mirror a lot of stuff, like some of the stuff they've done with AI, where they like kind of just tested some AI, and because it goes like online and humans are terrible, it learns shitty stuff and becomes worse.
Mm-hmm. And I love
and
how
they've done this.
Yeah. yeah, it's true. Yeah, I love how he's glitching when they first get him as well.
Max Headroom.
Yes, mm-hmm. right, exactly. And then when they try to give him his name, he's like Chucky.
Well, it's like, well, I'm going to name you Han Solo. And it's Mark Hamill saying, Chucky.
Chucky, yeah.
yeah. yeah.
That's not even close.
yeah. yeah, and you can tell that was obviously a nod to our voice actor yeah. for sure.
For sure.
Yeah. But again, it made it funny. Yeah. Yeah. But I love how the humor is somewhat understated. Like, it's yeah. not in your face. Like, Chucky kind of turned into a parody of himself as the movies
later
moved on.
Yeah.
And he's returned back to sort of
which
that
is funny because he's a parody of a parody.
Yeah, know, exactly.
Parodying already a slasher genre mm-hmm. and then he winds up parodying himself. I love how that franchise kind of changes as it goes, because you get into the later ones again, the ones that don't mm-hmm. go theatrical and just get straight to digital or DVD yeah. release, like Cult of Chucky.
Really good.
Which was really good.
Those last, mm-hmm. I think yeah. only two have hit direct, maybe three.
I think so.
And
yeah.
they've gotten a
or
lot
like
darker.
Streaming,
yeah,
which
they've
is like a release.
They've gotten a lot darker since then. Mm-hmm. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing the original franchise continue, which I think was planned as some mm-hmm. TV movies or
a series. Yeah,
series.
Talking about a
yeah. yeah. Right now, IMDb yeah. listed as a TV film, so maybe it's been downplayed into a movie. Yeah. But
Well, after the last one, the ending of the last one, I kind of want to see where that goes, because they really did end it on a really interesting note.
There's a bit of that, how they play with that a little bit with this one, because, I mean, feasibly, I would assume the sequel, he could just upload...
From the cloud
mm-hmm. into another doll. We already see him controlling other models, which Kaslan, by the end of that movie, takes off the market, but he leaves the Mark Ones, the Buddy Ones, still on the shelf. So,
yeah, but it was in
which is didn't make a lot of sense. Wouldn't you take the Buddy One, since the Buddy One is the one that went psycho? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Why would you take the Twos off the market? But
because the Buddy One's controlling the Twos. That's a corporate idea of doing something. It's like we're kind of doing something, but not doing something.
Yeah,
meaning they're recalling all of them, but I bet you they're just sitting in a warehouse till they just re-release them.
Yeah. So
that's basically it.
Yeah, and the simple idea of him just being able to upload from the cloud makes Chucky unkillable.
Yes, and it leaves you that room, right? Which is nice. It makes sense. I think because, I mean, with the original, it's a stretch when we start getting into the sequels as to how he continues to exist.
And that's just it. They create rules in the first film that they just chuck out the window by the second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this one... They set up a rule that makes sense.
Right? Yeah.
There's a lot of things in this movie that make sense that didn't make sense in the first one.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of holes within the logic of that remake, which I really appreciate.
Oh,
yeah.
And they also did in this remake, which is also something that was in the original, is they wanted to create that doubt. But, I mean, we know it as an audience, but everybody else around them thinking that maybe Andy is the killer.
Yeah.
And that was in the original. They thought they were kind of making that doubt where a six-year-old Andy was killing people.
Yes.
It was much darker.
Yeah, I don't think it started out that way. Like, it was just bad situations that were kind of implicating Andy in that remake until Chucky gets a little more sadistic.
Until Chucky gets the cop's mom.
Yeah. Because initially, Chucky's... I don't even think he doesn't think he's doing anything wrong.
No.
You know?
Well, because he has no moral compass.
No, he doesn't. And that's the thing. He sees the kid watching horror movies, and they're giggling and laughing, and that makes them happy.
Yeah.
So he's associating death with happiness.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's also very much where he doesn't quite understand. It's again with no moral compass, but there's all that nuance where, like, he says, I want this guy to go away, or I want these people to leave me alone. In Chucky's like, oh, I can make them leave you alone forever. Whereas the nuance of, like, humans can be like, no, just make them leave me alone. That's like the only thing.
Yeah, it's there's a finality. It's like, well, take them out of the equation.
It's the only thing he knows.
It's the only thing he knows. And I think that's the beauty of this remake, too, is the fact that Chucky's not evil.
Yeah. Right? No, not initially.
He's never evil.
No, well, by the end, he sounds pretty fucking sadistic.
He does, but he's...
But he's been damaged by his experiences.
And, true, but I mean, he's damaged and jealous, and he never learns the lesson of, like, we're friends to the end. But I mean, I think it's kind of that protocol, whereas it imprints on Andy. They have a whole thing where it imprints on Andy. So he is the only focus of this AI. If it made it so that the AI could learn and expand a bit, it would be fine. But it's just that singular thought.
That was actually the one, that just reminded me, that was one of the one rule breaks almost immediately in the movie when it imprints on Andy. That doll was a return.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it was glitching when it was returned.
Maybe it didn't imprint on the kid.
And that we don't know if it had or not. This mom returns Chucky back to the store and the eyes had turned red. And something was wrong.
Yeah, they said they turned it on and the eyes had turned red.
She didn't
say how far
they got in the setup
process.
Yeah, so let's just assume that isn't a hole.
Mm-hmm. I assume that they didn't get it all set up. That's what I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Because, she did say when they turned it on, the eyes went red.
But if you're like me, by the end of that remake, I'm like, awesome. I have two great versions of Chucky now.
Yes.
Yep.
Which we've had new Freddies and new Jasons and... I've never felt as welcoming to a new version of a character as much as this one.
Mm-hmm. No. It
with Evil Dead, as much as I like the remake, I really like this rendition of Chucky.
Yeah.
This is one of those remakes that does everything we've ever asked a remake to do.
Yeah.
It takes the original concept of the story and does something new with it.
Yeah.
And it does. It does everything right. It fixes the problems with the first one. Mm-hmm. Without taking away from the first one.
Oh, it makes a statement, like all good horror movies, about like something bigger, like technology and all the other part of it, like how AI without that other temperament in there, it doesn't quite work because it doesn't understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's that nod to the Terminator movies too, where with
yes.
machines without controls.
Yeah.
Right? And this is a good example of that.
Like Fallon, who says at the beginning, like going, this is how all those terrible, horrible machines rise movies start.
Yeah. And the other thing that they tried to tap into in this movie is the, I'm going to say it, the it phenomenon with the groups of kids that team up together to fight a bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, when about halfway through, especially when Andy starts making those friends, now we've got four, and I'm like, wow, it suddenly became Stranger Things.
Yes.
Yeah. It does, but in this movie, I think what happens with it organically works in the fact that Andy making new friends is a threat to Chucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it really does kind of up the stakes in a very lateral way.
It serves the story really well.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. The way the script's done, it feels well, but at the same time, if you've watched a couple of seasons of Stranger Things, like, you know what they're doing. It is very obvious they're just playing on things that are popular in pop culture.
Oh, for sure.
But horror movies often do. So I forgave it. I mean, it is fairly blatant and in your face, but I didn't mind.
Yeah, they even made the young girl the badass.
Yeah.
Right? Just like they did in Stranger Things.
Yeah.
I put it at the end, I'm like, I love Fallon. She's awesome.
I love Fallon. They should have six of her.
And you know what? Puck, too. Puck was just a lot of fun.
Yeah, Pug was all right.
He was dumb, but he was fun.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get into this a little bit more after we play the classic 1988 trailer.
Everyone has a birthday they'll always remember.
Can we open my presents now, Mommy? A good guy! I knew it!
I'm Chucky.
He's something, isn't he?
This is Andy's.
Time for bed, Andy.
Good night, baby.
Good night, Aunt Maggie. Good night, Chucky.
Everyone knows most accidents happen at home.
How did that happen?
This is no accident.
Andy? I'm Detective Mike Norris. Homicide.
Andy!
Miss Peterson's dead, Miss Barkley. She fell from your kitchen window.
Someone's moved in with the Barkley family. And so has terror.
Mommy, I know who was on the counter.
Andy!
Who, Andy?
Chucky.
Nobody believes you about Chucky.
My hand.
Oh, for God's sake.
Why won't you believe?
Because I'm sane. Mrs. Barkley, sane and rational.
No one believes the truth. Or lives to tell it. There's nothing nice about murder. And there's nothing innocent about child's play.
All right, that was Child's Play from 1988. Screenplay was by Don Mancini, who's stuck with the entire franchise up until the remake. So he's associated with Child's Play everything and Chucky everything.
And that's pretty much his entire resume.
For the most part. I mean, it's not a bad gig to be able to do an entire career off one idea that you've done. And he's hopefully benefited from that financially from all the other marketing that goes along with that.
But if you get it with the original kind of timeline and the original kind of Chucky going through, they have kind of expanded it and pushed it forward farther than like other slasher movies have, you know, like the character actually kind of...
Chucky lends itself well to moving him into different flavors and genres. And really opens them up to not repeating itself too often. And I think that's why people keep coming back, is because each one is just a little different every time around. So,
yeah, you never really know what you're going to get with Chucky.
Yeah. It's also co-written with John Lafia, who directed Child's Play 2. And the screenplay was also by Tom Holland, who directed this movie, and we have talked about a couple of times, which was episode 45.
Fright Night.
And I don't have the episode for Class of 84, but...
It's 102.
102.
102.
Yeah. So
right around the hundreds.
Yeah, so we've done it a few times. This movie stars Catherine Hicks as Karen, the mom of Andy Barclay. And we talked about, well, I've talked with her in episode 10. When I visited Vulcan for Vulcan, the Spock days. We talked a lot about this movie in particular. So go check that out because it'll be a nice companion piece, this little interview I did with Catherine Hicks.
Excellent.
And she met her husband on this set. So.
Yes, I read that too.
Yeah, who was a special effects guy, Kevin Yeager, who designed Chucky.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, there's a pedigree.
Yeah. In the interview, I say, so Chucky's your first child?
And did she go like, I've never heard that joke before?
She just laughed a bit.
Or she's probably,
you'll have to listen to the episode to find out how
what
she
kind
acted.
Of a mother do you think I am?
She's a sweet lady. She really is. It was a tough interview though, because I didn't know where to go. I wanted to talk about her husband more than her career. Like, I've seen Child's Play and Star Trek 4. That's it.
But I've seen a bunch of her other stuff. She has a pretty good resume.
Yeah, where were you on that one? I could have used you on that one. So I was trying to pull from other areas. Chris Sarandon, and we have talked about him before. He was the Detective Mike Norris, and he was also in episode 45, Fright Night.
Yep. Both of them.
Yeah, yes, he was also in the remake as a cameo appearance. So he's in episode 45 twice.
Yes.
And Alex Vincent is Andy Barclay, and he returned in Child's Play 2 and then kind of went into like a retirement as he got older, but came back to do some of the later direct-to-video series stuff when he appeared right at the end of...
it was a post-credit sequence.
Yeah, and then that leads into Cult of Chucky. So.
Yep.
Where he's got a more prominent
role.
Very
good.
Yeah, so it's cool to see Alex Vincent kind of return back to the role that he started.
And playing the character, you don't see that very often, if ever.
No, especially when you duck out of acting for so long as he did. It is strange, but at the same time, it's really nice to see the same guys come back.
Not recasting yet.
Yeah. And, of course, Brad Dourif is the titular Charles Lee Ray, a.k.a. Chucky. It's probably the only movie where we see him as Charles Lee Ray, outside of maybe some flashback stuff, I think, in the later films.
Yeah, I think there's only flashbacks from here.
Because he's so much older now, but has continued to be the voice, with the exception of the remake, of course. And we have talked about him a couple of times. He was in episode 54.
Cuckoo's Nest, hardest Cuckoo's episode Nest. We've ever done.
Yeah. One flew over the Cuckoo's Nest. That was a tough one. Who thought we could make that better? Not I.
We can't.
No, I hadn't seen it, so I didn't know at the time how damn good it was. Well, but I knew I could make it worse.
Yes.
So go check out how I made One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest much worse.
I was out of the province at the time. When I heard about it, I'm like, what the hell?
Sam convinced me. I won't let him do it again.
Okay.
You've let me do it since, but I do a little more research before I make a suggestion now.
Yeah. And then he turned up again in episode 59.
Halloween.
He was in the Halloween remake by Rob Zombie. Dinah Manoff was Maggie. She was in Grease. Tommy Swerdlow was Jack Santos. We've actually got him a couple of times.
Yes, really? We do.
I know.
The guy with almost no lines?
Yeah.
And he has almost no lines in everything he appears in, apparently.
But yeah, and that would include episode 180.
Real Genius.
And episode 199.
Howard the Duck.
Howard the Duck.
Woo!
Thank you, getting in on the woo.
Hey, I missed that episode, but I've seen that movie an embarrassing amount of times.
Jack Colvin was Dr. Ardmore, and I know him for endlessly pursuing Bruce Banner and the Hulk on the Incredible Hulk television series from the 70s and 80s.
Nice.
That's how I knew. I'm like, oh! You're the guy who wouldn't leave Bruce alone. Hulk always told you to leave him alone.
And seeing him as a doctor in that movie,
a very sadistic doctor when you really think about it.
Yeah.
And you see that facility, it's like, holy shit, fuck.
I wrote down a 6-year-old in a barred room with a steel door. What the fuck?
And the kids are sitting in the hallways, and all the rooms have the bar. Yeah, it's like... you're fucking evil. You're worse than Chucky.
Like, yeah.
It's like,
you deserve to die.
Absolutely. Oh,
yeah. They do telegraph the death, so I'm like, oh, you're going to die. Mm-hmm. And they do that in the remake, too. Neil Guantino was Eddie Caputo, who is a fairly major character who doesn't get any lines. Like, mm-hmm. he's the partner. They worked off this idea of, based on the Hillside Strangler, having a partner. So they did that with this one, which, what did he go by? The Lakeshore Strangler, yeah. Which... Charles Lee Ray. So when he is left behind for the cops to pick up or get shot by, he swears revenge on Eddie, and he does go back for him later in the film. But he was in Shawshank Redemption, so he finally did go to jail.
Although many decades before this movie, if you do the timeline of Shawshank Redemption.
Maybe. And Ray Oliver was Dr. Death. I just wanted to bring him up because it ties back to episode 172.
I didn't do that one.
Fire and Ice.
Oh.
Oh, how did I miss that?
I know. I was glad I did it. Dr. Death, of course, was the voodoo priest.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I only do the top people on the list there. And
I almost didn't. And then I'm like, there's something. I need to look this guy up.
He looked very familiar.
It was something about the quality of the voice, the facial features. And I'm like, I'm going to look him up. There's something here.
Something about him seemed very familiar when I
and,
saw him.
Then I found the connection. So
there we go.
It's always nice when I can connect to one of our rare animated films.
We've been connecting to that one a surprising amount, though.
I know, right?
There's a lot behind Fire and Ice.
Yes, we have.
Yeah, so pretty good stuff. So, Sam, you had a confession to make.
Yes, so I did see the original Child's Play in the theaters in 1988. And as I was watching this one, I realized I have not seen it since. I've seen the Child's Play movies, like the sequels and stuff, and some of them multiple times. But this one, I did not realize I'd not watched since.
I'm quietly judging you right now.
I can see it in your eyes.
Oh, see, but I'm sitting here going, like, I'm just amazed that, like, we're now at a time in our lives where you can go 30 years between watches of a movie.
There's that, too.
No, I mean,
that's a little upsetting.
I'm sure I've got one, but I revisit Child's Play quite often. This was one of those ones I'm like, man, even if I don't get a chance to rewatch this, I know it.
Yeah, and I mean, there weren't any surprises. It was still really firmly ingrained in my memory. It's just, I was really surprised. I'm like, oh, I haven't seen it since. And I think it's partly because he changed so much as he moved past the first one. I kind of got familiar with that version of Chucky, the sort of the more outgoing and sarcastic, wisecracking
more vocal
one.
Chucky.
Yeah,
the
I mean, Chucky. Yeah, I mean, once Charles Lee Ray transfers into the doll, we don't technically hear or see him full on till the middle of the movie. Yeah. It's about 45 minutes into the movie when we finally get that full-on reveal.
And he's very different than, like, he's a much darker Chucky than we get later on. I mean, he's still dark, but in a more comedic way. And knowing that, I just never felt the desire to go back to the darker Chucky, as much as I enjoyed this movie when I saw it in the theater.
I like it when they just gets kind of camp after a while, so it doesn't feel as scary. Like this one, this kid is six.
Yeah, it does go off the rails.
Terrible
when,
peril.
Yeah, it goes off the rails when Tiffany shows up.
Yeah,
yes,
but you know what? I don't care. I love Tiffany.
How can you not?
I absolutely love Tiffany. Jennifer Tilly, love her.
She was perfectly cast for that voice.
Her best role was a psychotic doll.
Oh, as a psychotic girlfriend.
Which she's done a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she rocks that role, and I respect her for it.
There are some fan films out that look at their relationship prior to Chucky.
Oh, wow.
Call it Tiffany and Chucky. There's also another one that came out this year, another fan film called Charles. But their fan films are not official canon stuff.
Yeah. Is that the one that Brad Dourif did the voice for?
He might have done it for Charles.
He did a voice for one of these fan shorts.
I think it was Charles.
Well, Charles, I think, might actually be feature length, but I don't know.
Yeah, it is. According to IMDb, it looked like it was a horror film, not as opposed to a short.
Yeah, whereas the Tiffany's were... Those were a series of shorts, actually. Mm-hmm. I think there's three of those.
Tiffany and Chucky.
Yeah.
But it just goes to show how iconic this character is, based on something that you can tell quite clearly was intended as a one-off. They never expected it to turn into the franchise that it did. But
there's always that hope, because, I mean, after... I mean, this is very late into the horror game, and I mean, by 88, things were starting to die out.
Yes.
The slasher genre was wearing out, and it wouldn't really get revived again until Scream, so Chucky was always this weird successful anomaly.
Yes.
I mean, not hugely. It's honestly, based on what I'm seeing here, numbers wise, it must have done fairly well in the video market for it to continue, because certainly wasn't its box office. The budget for this movie was $9 million. And it would go on to gross 10.9 worldwide. So
not a booming success.
No, it made a little bit more than its budget. I bet you a few more million happened in DVD rentals. And I mean, we were working the stores at that time. Yeah. And I know it was always a consistent renter.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I think it would have been consistently rented. And once people could start buying it, it got bought.
Yeah, no, I think that it's one of those movies that has, I mean, it obviously has legs and longevity. People continue to go to it. Even now, there's new audiences going to this movie because it's stupid fun.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it is, especially if you're not a huge horror fan and you're not kind of desensitized, it is genuinely scary at points.
It definitely does have its moments of scares and levity, and it's always a fun ride regardless of which film you're watching, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I adore the original film, but more than probably the rest of the franchise, but I love them all. And that's hard to say about any other franchise that's run this long. I can't say that about the Jasons at all. Yeah. I can't. I can get close with Freddy, but not.
And the Halloweens are hit and miss.
Yeah. I don't think any franchise that has been going this long is consistently as entertaining as Chucky.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I think, largely because we talk about the changes that Chucky makes through his personality and the things that happen to him. Mm-hmm. That's what keeps it interesting. They're not limited to the trope of the character, like they are with these other characters, like Jason and Michael Myers particularly, because they are the silent, deadly killer, and there's only so much you can do with that.
Mm-hmm. And they do with it's what they do. Some programs, like, you just return to zero at the end. Like some sitcom characters, they don't learn anything, they don't expand anywhere, they don't do anything, but by the end of the episode, they're back at the beginning where they started, and that's
Frasier.
Exactly what all of them...
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a great example, yeah.
The Simpsons themselves do that all the time.
And the Friday 13ths were the same way.
Yeah, like you begin at the beginning again. Like you don't, there's no growth in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Because you can't.
That's right, folks. Only on Invasion the Remake will we compare Jason to Frasier.
We will. Yeah, because Frasier doesn't learn a lot over the course of this series. His pomposity just keeps going.
Yeah.
So rather than a silent, emotionless killer, it's an overly emotional, pompous asswad.
Did my ass drop into the right spot for it to say asswad?
It did. I did not edit that, folks.
We did this in the take.
In the moment.
There are some entertaining episodes of Frasier, and I have watched it and I have enjoyed it. But yeah, as it gets, you can't watch more than three in a go, and then it grates.
Yeah, I agree.
Me three.
All right, so let's get back to the original film here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think this is one I don't need to walk people through. Everybody's seen it a million times. What's your favorite scenes in this movie?
Ooh, I wrote this down. When Chucky is in the cop car and Chris Sarandon is trying to avoid the knife being stabbed through the seat.
And he jumps up, so he's not getting
it. Jumps up.
Nuts.
It's the best physical... I don't think I've seen it anywhere else. It's
amazing. It's such a nice change for Sarandon as well, because he had come off of a couple of villain roles at this point. So he's kind of being typecast from Fright Night and...
Princess Bride.
Princess Bride, thank you. Yeah. And so this was a different role where he got to play the heroic cop.
And he did it well. He's one of those underrated actors, right? Because he does a good job in everything he does, particularly Princess Bride, but he's great in this.
He is. I like when he's investigating the weirdness that is surrounding the Barclay family, that starts with the death of Maggie and then continues on, but how he's seeing evidence towards that it's going to be Andy, but still willing to at least listen. I mean, Killer Doll, he does not believe, but...
Until
he
tries to kill him.
That's the one thing.
Karen's got a much bigger presence in this film than she does in the remake, which, considering the star power in the remake for that role, was kind of surprising.
It was, but it wasn't. I think that they really wanted to focus on, again, calling it the It phenomenon, but certainly the Stranger Things phenomenon as well, where it's focusing on the kids.
Yeah, which is why they made Andy a lot older. Mm-hmm. There's a neat dichotomy switch there. Andy in the original film, he's the innocent one.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that's kind of being manipulated by the doll from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's through Andy just being Andy and being exposed as a teenager to darker things, while you have this innocence in the doll, mm-hmm. not knowing how to process that.
Yes. Yep.
So they've almost switched roles.
To a certain extent, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to a certain extent. There's still a certain innocence to Andy because he's not doing it intentionally. No. There's no malintent.
No, not at all. He's at that kind of mid-range where he's just moving into his teen years. So, yeah. I would guess in the movie he was probably 14, 15 as far as his actual age as the character. Yeah.
In the remake, it's sort of, but it's weird. This buddy doll is just a strange phenomena because they've got it interacting with everything in your house. And I'm like going, mm-hmm. having it as a basis for all of your stuff in your house, having it in the doll is weird. Mm-hmm. It would be in a tower of some kind of anything, you know, really. It's sort of very strange how it,
well,
it's sort of a hub of sorts.
I would have thought as well, they probably didn't have a lot of the Caslin products in there because that kind of stuff's expensive, right? And she had to basically finagle her way to get the doll in the first place because in both movies, she can't afford a real one.
I could see them having the TV, but I think where the Caslin products come in, it's the creepy super who's got Caslin cameras and Caslin TVs and Caslin perv view stuff.
Yeah. That one turned into a whole Saw scene.
Yeah. Oh, that one freaked me out, but that was like legitimately scary.
Well, and that's a great thing. You start rooting for Chucky along the way because anybody who
they're
dies,
skeevy.
They're skeevy. Mm-hmm. So they kind of deserve it. And you're just like, all right, you don't feel bad. And that might have been why people rated a little less is you don't feel the jeopardy for the characters. You want those fuckers to die.
No, horribly. But it makes sense for the story, and it works so well.
Sure. Oh. I mean, Andy's it wasn't even his stepfather.
It was his mother's boyfriend
who's not a nice person, but he wasn't abusive or anything.
No. Well, so,
he gets close to it, though.
He got close moment. But, I mean, the doll was taunting him at that point.
Yeah.
True. No, but you know what?
There's hints there where he's interacting with her as well, where you're just like, you're such an abusive asshole.
Yeah, like you can tell it just hasn't happened yet.
Well, once the reveal is he's married and has his own family, it's like, oh, you're going to die horribly.
Yeah.
And he did.
And in the most brilliant way possible with the gnome and the head.
Oh, yeah, the tiller that runs on his head and scalps him, and then the scalp lands on the garden gnome.
And degloves his head. It degloved his whole head.
It did.
No, and then the face, Chucky returns back with the face and sticks it on a melon and sticks it in Andy's room, thinking that you'll like this.
Yeah, it's a nice present.
This will make you happy.
I had a question about that. Because, okay, so watermelons are out. They appear to be kind of growing and ripening, but it seems kind of chilly out. What month is this then? Because he's supposed to take the Christmas lights down, but I'm getting a very fall feel. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, that's a little bit out of context. Or not out of context. It just doesn't make sense because you're right.
I don't know what time
it is.
Have
you ever heard of imports?
I do, but even if you have imported watermelons in a very cold weather, they shouldn't be that good.
Yeah, I'm not sure what city we were supposed to be in. I didn't pay that much attention to it, but it was clearly Vancouver.
Yeah. Okay, well, then that could be it.
That's where it was temperate. Shot. So it was very temperate there, yes, for sure. Yeah. But I don't know where what the city was actually supposed to be. So.
But yeah, you get hints of it. Yeah, all these people died terribly.
Yes. Yeah, but his death.
They had to get more creative with the kills because they couldn't use the ones in the original film. But the original film ones, they're a little more standard slashery, but they still age fine. They're still like the little toy hammer that takes out Maggie, but it's the result of that that sends her through the window. Mm-hmm. I like how it's something minor that becomes major.
Yes. And I mean the
remake does that well too.
Yeah, it does it very well, but the when he kills Eddie, his ex-partner. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very deliberate. It's not graphic.
No.
Right? You see is the explosion. You don't see what happens to him at all.
Yeah. Oh, I was kind of writing down when I was looking at this, it's like the remake is much gorier than the original. There's not a lot of bloodshed. In the original, like even when Maggie falls out the window, like you just sort of see this concrete dummy hit the car and that's it.
That did not age well. That did not look good.
It did not, you're right. Yeah. But yeah, it's... Considering that we had seen much more graphic horror with Freddy Krueger and Jason and Michael Myers to a certain extent, but certainly Freddy and Jason sort of set this bar for gore. Yeah. And I like the fact that they didn't go to that in the original.
The scariest thing in the original movie is Andy on the subway.
Yes, yes.
By
right?
himself.
Yeah.
Unaccompanied.
In this
riding
skeevy neighborhood.
In the city. Yeah, I was watching that whole thing, and
six.
That's the most pair. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. And being really close to the house when it blows up.
Yes.
There's one of the cutscenes is him falling into a ditch away from the house. Because every time I watch this movie, as many times as I've seen it, how is he alive?
Yes.
I know.
That was my thought when we were watching it.
It was a cutscene.
Yeah, a cutscene where he goes into the ditch. But yeah. You know what? As I go on, like, even as a 6-year-old, you kind of see he's got that sort of latchkey kid kind of deal where he takes care of himself pretty much, and I see him being very innovative in a number of ways during the course of this movie. Like,
well, he's got this weird independence about him for somebody so young.
Six, he knows how to fool Chucky, get the keys, get out. Like, he knows to push stuff against the door so people can't get in. Like,
he is pretty self-sufficient for a 6-year-old. Yeah. I mean, I love watching him hauling around Chucky is just as big as he
is. Yes. Right. And I mean, that's a really great visual. That's a good thing. I'm glad you mentioned that, because it's one thing that I did miss from the original in this is that visual of the...
Because the doll can walk on its own just fine.
Yeah. But the fact that he's carrying it around and he can barely carry it without dragging his feet on the ground.
Yeah.
Right? It just... When that Chucky starts to sort of show his evil side, the actual Chucky part of it, it makes it that much creepier because they're of a size.
Yeah. Yeah, and when...
He can't overpower Chucky.
Yeah, when Chucky finds out from the voodoo priest that you're turning human and you're going to be vulnerable, you can only get out of this by possessing the first person you revealed yourself to, which was Andy. So he's all excited. I'm like, I get to be six years old again.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
He gets to go through puberty and...
I don't know if that's a selling point.
Certainly not for me.
The puberty part, not so much, but the teen college years?
Especially knowing what you know now?
Yeah.
I can do it.
He's got it all in his head already.
Yeah. See, I would do it if I could get that like young brain tissue where I could really absorb stuff really well. Mm-hmm.
But he's also a hardened serial killer, so I don't know how much fun it would be, because he would be always want to go back to his nature.
Yeah, but you'd have a total good son scenario, like that Macaulay Culkin movie where he is killing people, but he's just a kid, so nobody believes it.
Yeah.
Just that whole concept would have been something really interesting to explore.
But I kept wondering, like, if he goes into the kid, what happens to the kid's soul? Like, is he just possessed? Is it like a get-out situation?
It does make you wonder, and I'm wondering how they're going to do that post-cult of Chucky, where we finally get to see that.
Yeah.
Well, what does happen? And it took a lot of movies before we finally got there, and he succeeded in it.
It probably took them that long to figure out what they were going to do with it.
Because it's a good question, because Tiffany just goes into another doll, so that doesn't answer anything.
I've only watched that one once, but he gets into Fiona Dorff by the end of that movie. Now he has a human body again.
And it's her and Jennifer Tilly as taken over by Tiffany, who's taken over Jennifer Tilly, which is also something that needs to be answered.
Oh, so much there.
It's so cool.
That's a lot to unpack, but yeah.
It's a lot to unpack, but I can't wait.
I'm looking forward to that. And Fiona Dorff, she actually, because the way they did this movie, they needed to match up the voice work.
Yes.
So they recorded all of Brad Dorff's stuff beforehand so the animatronics could just match up on the day. And they didn't realize Fiona Dorff, who's just like little 5-6-year-old who was actually in the corner while his dad is shouting the scary stuff into a microphone and started crying.
Yeah.
So she's literally been there with Chucky from her young years, and now she's involved in the franchise herself.
You know what? She could have been Andy.
Yeah.
There's Andy McDowell. You can be girl Andy.
Yeah. In a way, Chucky did win.
In a way.
Chucky now possesses her.
And I'm sure they thought of that when they included her in the...
I'm sure there would have been, it was some sort of nod there, yeah.
Because, Austin, I hate to break to you. Like, it's sort of like, a My Buddy doll is fine. But, if you're going to do, like, a doll movie, maybe have Fiona. But the buddy doll, was it the good guy?
The good guy.
The good guy dolls. But there was also a real life...
There was... you're right. It was called the My Buddy doll.
Yes.
That they based Chucky off of. And a little with a little bit of Raggedy Ann and Andy thrown in some of their colors and the freckles and that sort of thing. A little mix of some classic dolls in there. But that's what it was. And they they were even going to say My Bloody Buddy was the original title of the film, which obviously didn't fly for the guys who actually make that doll.
No.
Not as big of a deal now because nobody knows what a My Bloody doll is without Googling it.
Yeah. But apparently it did affect their sales following this movie.
I'm sure it did.
Yeah, for sure it did, yeah.
And they do a bigger nod in the remake because instead of good guy dolls, they do call them buddy dolls, but with an eye, because anything that's Wi-Fi connectivity has to have an eye. Right.
Yes.
And I kept wondering if like the My Buddy doll had Wi-Fi in it. Because, I mean, without a router, how is it doing half of this shit?
Minimally Bluetooth.
Yeah, minimally Bluetooth.
Yeah. So he may have a range.
I was watching what, like in our 31 Days of Horror, I can't remember which movie because I've been watching so many. There was actually one scene and I was watching it and there's a Teddy Ruxpin in it. And I'm like, you know what? Of all the creepy stuff I'm watching, the Teddy Ruxpin is the scariest part of the scene and it's not doing anything.
I think I know which horror movie you're talking about. But yes,
those Ruxpins are freaky.
They are.
And that's just it. They were talking dolls at this point in time when they made this, Teddy Ruxpin being the one that would readily come to mind as well. And what you'd do is you'd stick a tape in their back and then it would randomly play things as the animatronics move the face. So it was technology you knew kind of could work. And that's what I like about the remake is the way modern technology is now. It's still foresight, but you can imagine, like, yeah, this is something that is probably not that far off, at least maybe being thought about. You know, Apple would be in the best spot to do that with all of their connectivity devices, or Amazon, because they've got a lot of those type of devices out there as well.
There's so many, but yeah, there's certainly Apple and Amazon are good examples of companies that are really well situated to move forward with something like that. Yeah.
Well, when you talk about like the Home, the Alexa and the Home app things that control bits of your home, that's essentially what this Caslan thing is doing.
That's
all
what
the time.
How they marketed it at the beginning of the movie is as a personal home device.
Yeah, home.
Could you imagine your Alexa or your
walking around the room?
Think about it though. I mean,
you have a Roomba. Come on, it's not that far off.
Freddy is nice, and I like him, and we get along great. I am with Freddy, but I'm not going to have like a walking, talking, creepy thing running my life.
Well, exactly. But instead of having one of those devices in every room, like a lot of people do, it just sort of follows you from room to room if you call it or whatever. But I can see them thinking, well, wouldn't that be convenient?
Right?
Yeah.
You charge a lot more money for it because now you're not selling multiple devices for a home. But yeah, I could see them thinking, hey, this is not a bad idea.
Yeah, and then you've got that friendliness with the kids, unless you get a disgruntled employee who reprograms it before committing suicide.
Yeah.
Remake.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Or like, yeah, it just takes off the violence controls, which again, why?
Yeah.
Yeah, and again, I think that would have been interesting at the end, even in saying, yes, it looks like
he worked in a sweatshop. He was unhappy.
He wasn't happy.
No, unhappy.
No, I get why he did it, but why was it necessary for violence
why was that protocol even in there?
Programming.
Right, and again, and I think that's where the disclaimer at the end of the movie from Tim Matheson should have said, we were using software that had been written originally for military protocol.
Actually, I don't think it...
That where the violence protocols had not been properly removed.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have explained why it was there, because that was the only thing that bugged me, was the fact that why was it there in the first place?
But you know, if they did that, that would have to be a private scene, because with corporations the way they are now, that would be admitting culpability for something that they had done wrong, would have left them open to being sued, and they never would
have. Well, that's a great place to go in the sequel to bring that character back, and as we start looking into the boardroom, I mean, we know Chucky's still out there, having uploaded to another doll, so, you know, this problem hasn't gone away.
You know what I imagine? You don't see the bottom of Tim Matheson. What if he's just like one of the more extended versions and he's just a robot from the bottom down and just a figurehead?
And now Trish is writing the sequel already.
That's a third movie idea. Come on.
I know. Well, because I just want to speed it up. But the final, I do admit they ramped it up a huge amount in the final scene of the remake. I really appreciated that. Where it's like the launch of the Buddy 2 and it's a full building of people.
Yes. Oh,
well,
yeah.
You know what? Let's get into that right after we run the 2019 trailer, and we'll really start digging into that, and we can talk about that final scene.
Something's wrong with Chucky.
Andy, I know this move has been really tough, but this is supposed to be a new start for us, remember? You said you were going to try to make new friends.
Buddy can connect to and control all of your Caslan products and smart home devices. Introducing your new best friend.
He did something.
Andy, if you know something, you better tell me.
Something's wrong with Chucky.
Buddy can connect to and control all of your camera products.
Chucky is a toy. He could be anywhere.
Welcome to Dazzling Car.
We have to stop him.
Good night, Andy.
All right, that was The Child's Play from this year, 2019. Mm. A screenplay by Tyler Burton Smith, who is going to be writing Kung Fury 2.
Ooh.
Right? And the director was Lars Klevberg. Not much behind him as well. He's did a movie called The Wall and Polaroid. And the movie stars Aubrey Plaza.
Who we've never talked about. But she was so good.
She was quite good. I made a comment early on. Like, I liked her so much at the beginning, and I thought she was going to play more, and she does kind of fade off in the background once we meet Andy. And so it does feel a bit disjointed there to put somebody such recognizable and talented actress in the lead and then not use her. But when she's on screen, I'm like, yeah, she's playing herself. Aubrey Plaza is one of those people who I'm sure is very nice, but scares the shit out of me.
Oh, she's awesome in the best way.
She is.
What did I say when you texted me? He's like, yeah, she is. Seriously toned down because she's fucking nuts.
but in the best way.
And that's actually exactly what I said afterwards.
Awesome. Of course, Mark Hamill plays the voice of Chucky, and we've talked about him a couple of times. Episode 23.
Force Awakens.
Star Wars, New Hope, and Force Awakens. And 100 episodes later, in episode 123, like we planned it that way.
It is like that. I wonder if we get that lucky with the new one.
I don't know.
We'll have to try it. But yeah, that was Empire and The Last Jedi.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So those are the only times we had opportunity. But of course, if you're going to be talking about Star Wars, you're going to be talking about Mark Hamill. So go check out our Star Wars episodes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Inevitably.
Yes. And I mean, been a part of our lives even beyond Star Wars. The now just as associated as the voice of the Joker on the Batman animated series and lots of animated stuff. He's done tons of voice work at this point. So he's ingratiated himself to an entire new generation of people through animation.
Yeah. I think he prefers voice work to actual on-screen acting or performances now, and has for a long time. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk about, just really briefly mention one that you and I both love, Sushi Girl.
Oh, Sushi Girl, yeah. He was really good in that.
He was great in that, and if you haven't seen
he kind of was doing a Peter Lorre thing in that.
Yeah, he was wonderful.
Oh, and was it The Kingsman? A very small role in that.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yep. Tim Matheson, who was Henry Caslan, we've never had a chance to talk about, but he was in Animal House. Go check that out. Animal House is good.
Yes.
Okay. Animal House is great. Gabriel Bateman was Andy Barclay. He actually was in Lights Out, and I think everybody in this room has seen it.
Yeah,
we have brought up Lights Out within our 31 Days of Horror special a couple of years ago.
Yeah, you and I both watched that one year.
And I did the other year.
Yeah, exactly. Brian Tyree Henry was Detective Mike Norris. He's awesome. He was most recently in Hotel Artemis, and he's in the upcoming Godzilla vs. Kong and The Eternals from Marvel. Yeah. So he's really good.
He's
blowing up fast.
I wanted more of him in this movie, actually.
He was this really kindly neighbor and also the detective.
Yes.
And, you couldn't help but love him.
And then I was shipping them at the end, and I was like, oh, come on. You got to – you and Aubrey Plaza, you make a great pair.
Yeah. And you almost got the feeling that they were setting that up, and then they never followed through on it.
But I kind of sort of appreciate that you don't have to shoehorn in a love story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there's at one point, and I have to – confess this. I know I'm not giving anything away because if you've seen the movies, you've seen the movies where the drone kind of gets him. And I think he's like,
yeah, you're afraid he died. Yeah.
I literally screamed out in my apartment, oh no, Mike!
And I actually wrote down, Mike's dead. Yeah. And then he's like, and then later on my notes go, oh no, he's not.
I actually said, you fuckers, while I was watching it.
Yeah, we all liked Mike.
Yeah.
Trent Redcop, Redicop? Trent Redicop. Trent Redicop was Gabe. David Lewis was Shane. You could see him maybe in The Man of Steel. I don't know who he played, but he was in The Man of Steel. Beatrice Kiddos was Fallon. She plays Annie on iZombie.
Nice.
So that's where most people will be able to find
Beatrice Kiddos?
Beatrice Kittos.
Kittos. It's almost like Beatrice Kiddo. Or
Kitsos.
Kitsos. But it's almost like Beatrice Kiddo from Kill Bill.
Almost, yeah.
Ty Consiglio was Pug, and Carlise Burke was Doreen.
We've talked about her before.
We have.
Recently.
Okay.
She was in episode 207, The Out of Towners.
I totally missed it.
Yeah.
Oh, where was she in that one?
She was one of the hotel clerks, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah. She probably was, yeah.
Cool. Because she's been in a lot. I recognized her face when
yeah,
I saw her.
Yeah, she's been in a lot. And I was really sad when she died as well. I liked her as well.
I was traumatized.
And I thought it was freaking hilarious when they gave her the watermelon with the face attached to it.
Yes. What do we do? Oh, it's a present for the lady down the hall.
It did turn into a bit of a sitcom Frasier moment, actually, when bringing that back around. But that was a little bit of, we need to fill out the script with some comedy.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I mean, and that did lead us to the whole cops think Andy is a fucking serial killer moment and killed his
mom. When they find the watermelon with the face on it in the garbage, so, and he makes the connection because he sees the wrapping paper. And
So which we kind of needed to throw back to the original movie and that the thought that Andy might be doing this rather than this doll, because who's going to believe it's a doll, right?
But I love the idea of like how she dies. Part of what contributes to it is a lot of this fear of those self-driving cars.
Yes.
Like, if you aren't truly in control, what happens?
Mm-hmm.
It was terrifying.
Yeah, and it does. It brings that fear to life in this movie. It might be the first movie to actually say, hey, yeah, these self-driving cars, look what happened.
Well, Fate of the Furious did, but they just launched them at people.
That's true. That is true. This movie was also budgeted at $10 million, which means it was only $1 million more than the 88 one.
30 years later. It cost $1 million more.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, with inflation, the original one cost more than this one.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
How?
I don't know.
Because this is much more nuanced.
They were going with that low budget thing. This is probably being developed before. I mean, it is from the producers of it because the commercial told us so.
And if I was reading back to my it syndrome comments earlier too.
It was low budget horrors like Conjuring that was making a lot of money. So if they're not tossing a lot of money at this, hopefully they can make some money. Domestically, it grossed just under $30 million.
So that worldwide, could watch that sequel.
Worldwide, it was $45 million. So it's not a huge success or anything, but it's definitely, when you're quadrupling your money, that's not a disaster either.
No, and if they can keep those budgets down, then we could see some more.
Yeah, and they wound up doing a lot in this movie with very little.
They did an amazing bit. Like, that's why I can't believe it. Like, those dolls themselves must have...
Yeah, well, they built six of them.
A bunch of that budget.
You would think, and I mean, the kills were... Actually, they feel graphic, but you don't see a lot happening on screen. Like when the guy gets dropped onto the table saw, you see limbs going flying, but you don't actually see him falling onto the thing like you would in a Saw movie. Yeah. So you see the result of what happened.
And your brain fills in the rest. Yeah.
Yeah. So there is a lot of gore, but it is not like a Saw movie level of gore where you're going to see it happening. You see the results of it happening. You don't really need to see the cuts to know what's happening.
They pan away and see the spray of the stuff.
And it's the same with the rototiller scene. You see it get close to him, and then you see his hair fly off and land on the gnome.
Yeah.
You see a bit of it where it attacks his head.
Yeah, you do see the effect of it later where the makeup is...
But you only really see his head.
Yeah.
They let your brain do the work, which is what, in a lot of cases, makes an effective horror.
Mm-hmm. It's like the drones with the razor blades on it. You don't actually have to see a lot of the results of that. So you get the close-up of the drone with the blades on it, and you're like, all right. That's exactly what's going to happen. So someone grabs their throat or something, they know what happens.
And I did have a why the fuck moment when I saw those. Why would they have drones with razor-sharp blades
Oh no, Chucky attached Chucky would the razor blades.
Oh, that's okay.
Chucky would have done that.
Yeah, Chucky.
But they don't show it, and I didn't. No. My brain didn't make that connection.
Yeah, there was definitely a scene they could have just used a little Chucky inventiveness. But there's a lot of things like, how did a little doll do this?
Yeah,
you know, how did this little doll tie up on Aubrey Plaza? But
I know, like, there's a lot of stuff where I would like them to go kind of into is like, oh yeah, no, the Chucky doll is
that's the thing with the horror movie. We just have to accept that he does.
Yes,
uh-huh. You don't need to know the how. Most of the time, unless you get nitpicky about it.
Yeah. And then they brought the bears. I kind of like the idea. It's like they made these bears, but they are nightmare fuel. Yeah.
You know what?
These are not cuddly bears.
Speaking of Teddy Ruxpin.
I think that it was deliberately done as a nod to that.
Yeah, actually. But Teddy Ruxpin is more cuddly than that freak show.
You know, my favorite kill in this, and I laughed my ass off, and I'm a horrible human being for it, the mascot for the Buddy Doll at the big release. He's got his throat sliced by Chucky just before he put the mask on, or while he had
right
it on.
Right after.
Yeah. So when he comes out, he's stumbling because he's actually spewing blood out of his neck, and he takes off his giant head and spews all over this 6-year-old, 7-year-old child, this little girl, and she's just covered and screaming. Yep. And I was laughing.
I have to admit,
laughs come in the last half, and that was one of those moments. You shouldn't laugh at it, but you do.
But the deaths are pretty comical when they happen, and ironic, too. Like, going back to the guy who's surveilling his apartment building and perving on Aubrey Plaza in the shower and whatnot, and is dropped, and you know it's going to hit his nuts first.
Well, Chucky had already stabbed him up in the nuts earlier.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So, I mean,
so
there's...
Chucky understands what's going on.
There's a lot of justice there with the deaths.
Oh, well, it's like the cop says, white guy dying in a watermelon patch.
One of the best lines ever.
Kind of ironic. But at that time, too, he's like, I just got these shoes. I'm like, why are you wearing white shoes? It's a murder detective. I would never wear new shoes, let alone white shoes.
And why aren't you wearing the little booties that go over
crime scene.
Yeah, crime scene. Come on.
Even so, they're new shoes. Leave them at home.
Yeah. And it was just there for the joke. And that's why they were white, too, so you wouldn't miss them.
Wear them on a date. And then he never wears them again.
Oh, it was just there for the joke, yeah.
Oh, and then you have, like, Fallon who takes out the bear. Because, like, he's... At this point, the cop has handcuffed him to, like, a...
Handcuffed Andy, yeah.
Handcuffed to one of, like, it's like a cart... Not a cart, but, like, a
gondola
shelf.
At the end, yeah.
Yeah, it actually looked like it was a wire shelf, which, to be honest, wouldn't have taken much effort to tip over and drag along, but...
Yeah, he's not thinking like that.
Yeah, he's struggling an awful lot trying to drag away something that's really not that hard to move around.
Yeah.
No.
Well, he should have emptied it, but he doesn't think of that. Mm-hmm. He's just trying to get away. But then, then Fallon comes along, duck, and like hits it with, like, I love how they come armed with like a hedge trimmer.
Yeah.
She's bitching.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
She's so badass. So I'm going to go with her.
Yeah.
she says that. I love that. Yeah.
Me too.
Yep. But yeah, it's so crazy. But yeah, how many people like just die?
Mm-hmm. And they're very clever about setting up the paranoia with the movie. Like Chucky is in the remake, it's the obsessiveness with Andy that he's imprinted on that's driving him to do these things. But at the same time, he taunts people. Like he's constant, much like your smart device, it's constantly recording and constantly listening.
Mm-hmm. I'm Andy's best friend.
Yeah, so that's how it taunts people before they die. He is.
Yes.
And that's pulling in a territory that we haven't seen Chucky do before. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen Chucky as the doll in the original franchise at times become a little more sympathetic to some of the characters around him, mainly because, like, that character's surrounded by assholes. And, you know, by that point, people are really starting to like Chucky, so he became almost an anti-hero at times.
At some points, but he's 9/10 out for himself.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But at least in this instance, his selfishness is based on, like, just a misunderstanding of how things work.
Yeah, it's Chucky in the original films, always quick to anger. He'll go after you for trying to kill somebody else when he wanted to do it first.
Yes.
You know, like, there's a lot of pettiness to Charles Lee Ray.
Yeah.
There's nothing there. It's a blank slate for this remake, and that's really cool. I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes now that it has a fully formed personality. By the end of the movie, he's pretty much fully formed
Yes.
into what he's going to be.
when I first saw like what they were doing with it, I'm like, oh, they just got ditched the whole supernatural aspect of it entirely. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I'd be interested to see how they accomplish what they are going to. Yeah. And they did it so damn well.
Because it makes sense. And like, it's like, there's a lot of stuff. Like, there's internet detritus out there that's like, just there's leftover shit. So you could see like how this, a file somewhere is some leftover shit that's just Chucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to be so much nicer to my technology when it's not doing what I want it to do now.
Yeah.
See, this is why Freddie and I get along. I knew to make friends with my Roomba.
Yeah. But I just love the slow progression of how Chucky changes.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's just the effects of people on him. Right, the effects of Andy on him and the effects of Mike on him, because he can see that Mike's not a nice person.
And it angers him. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can see it visibly anger him.
Yeah, when he pushes him down, the eyes go red immediately.
Yeah, and he thinks of the most basic solution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, part of that comes from the horror movies. It's like, well, you like horror, that makes you happy, and getting rid of this man might make you happy. Mm-hmm. I can do those two things to make you happy.
The one thing that they didn't do quite as well in the remake is in the original Chucky, the one things that made Chucky scary was the fact that you never really knew where he was, because he was so small. He was never, a lot of time he wasn't in sight. You just knew he was around.
Yeah. I disagree with where you're trying to go here, because
I mean, they did it at the end.
They did it differently in the remake. I mean, they could still do it, but because Chucky could project his voice into other things, if that had that capability and devices.
Where was the
so
Wi-Fi speakers?
He missed, the Wi-Fi speakers and TVs and everything else.
And Andy's earpiece.
Even Andy's earpiece, because he's partially deaf. So he's transmitting himself and making it sound like he's elsewhere all the time without having to jump around. I mean, he could probably move around, but he is an animatronics. He probably, logically, he can't move that fast.
True.
But he still wound up actually being pretty stealthy, because he got out of the apartment and into a car and followed this lady. So, I mean, he's pretty stealthy even as a animatronic robot.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, he doesn't really have to get, because when you talk, it's a Caslan car that picks her up. All he would have to do is call another Caslan car, get in it, control it to get to the bingo hall.
Mm-hmm.
That's all he needs to do.
I mean, he's small enough. He could probably just even cling to it. Not a big deal.
Yeah.
But I wish we would have seen something like that, to be honest.
True. But I mean, I would like to see him just get in the car and be like, let's go. But I like how they also showed it. Like, you don't know where he is, but there's that one shot where he's looking at Andy's feet.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy sees the thing on the screen, so he knows he's under the couch. But it's like he can tease where he is because of that visual. Yeah.
I love that they figured out a way to do that with it. Like, because he's a smart device, well, we can use another device to see through Chucky's eyes, so they'd get on.
And
their
it was
iPhone.
Fallon again who figured it out.
Yeah. So this is how you track your doll. It's the Find My Phone app.
Yeah.
So good. There's so many aspects of this that really kind of tap into those. That any fears we have about smart devices and how they sort of control our lives and what they could do if they wanted to.
And I think that's what makes the remake so effective, is it's part of our world now. And we can absolutely see that logical progression and the possibilities of it. These are all things that are more plausible than the original film and the voodoo stuff that they did. Both are equally enjoyable, though.
I would put them on par with each other, I would say.
It's a great first outing.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I put the remake a little bit higher because it really just taps into some of my very basic fears. But the original is also incredibly good, because the feeling, that peril that Andy goes through, like, I just, this tiny, tiny child, it's horrifying.
I'll edge out the original over the remake a little bit, because I kind of miss the innocence of Andy and the six-year-old child.
And he's so small, even for six, he's really tiny.
Yeah.
And that gives you a real sense of discomfort watching him be threatened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I love watching him, like, just take charge. He grabs the baseball bat and he just takes a hold of everything. Like, so cool to watch him do stuff. But he has the best line that I don't think any adult ever has in any horror movie, where Chucky's like, I thought we were friends to the end. And Andy's like, this is the end, friend. Mm-hmm. And he throws the match and I'm like, badass for a six-year-old.
It was. And that's how we're going to end this episode, by the way. I loved it. There was one really good new line within the remake, because Chucky had some great stuff there as well. But I think Andy definitely got the line of the movie.
Yeah.
Chucky actually had, if they don't let us play, they all go away.
Oh my God. Yeah.
This, it was like, this is so good. That, when he uttered that line, I'm like, I was all in at that point. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Because it's sort of like, yeah, no, this relationship is over, but he doesn't know that yet.
Yeah. You've hurt me one too many times, Andy.
No, Chucky's like, no, Chucky, you've hurt me one too many times. This relationship is over.
Yeah, there's a few things there that are in the remake that don't quite work. I mean, the one scene where Aubrey Plaza is getting hung by the forklift,
mm-hmm.
when they fall, they it's fall too a long high. Fucking way.
It does.
It shouldn't have been as high.
Well, especially when we already saw somebody fall and shatter their ankle.
Oh, and that was so uncomfortable. Roof,
and I'd say they were actually even higher up. Nobody got injured yeah. off of that one. So, yeah.
And she gets herself untied. That was something that bothered me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that bothered me as
well.
I will go
with that.
But it's a minor, minor thing to pick on.
I'm right? so pleased I saw Mike, though. I was like, I screamed, oh no. I was like, I was getting really mad after that.
I love the way they play with the horror trope where you think he's dead, but he's not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's a nice little like twist on that trope.
Yeah, I mean, both movies we still get the jump scare at the end. Like, oh, okay, we finally beat Chucky, only for him to come back at you one more time.
And see, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it. I hate when movies do an obvious, we're going to have a sequel. I don't like it as much, but I mean, I don't sort of get why it has to
with
happen.
With something like Chucky, you forgive it because you are expecting it to happen.
I am expecting it, but I don't know. I just don't need it broadcast.
No, but by the nature of Chucky and the fact that you know that he's...
Unkillable.
He's unkillable. And the fact that he is able to access the cloud. They didn't even need to telegraph it because you kind of knew it's there anyhow, right?
Mm-hmm. No, like you could have ended it. I would have liked a different scene to end it, kind of like how they've brought them back to the factory. Like something that just is less overt, less... I don't know. There's something about it that's just too smug.
There's that "Hey dummies" moment there. I think is like if you didn't get it through the rest of the movie, we're going to show you, mm-hmm. and it's a little insulting.
That's it. Yeah, I think you've nailed it on the head. I think that's what bothers me. Yeah. Is it's just not. Yeah. It's insulting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and that's the way I felt about it. Is I felt a little insulted. It's like, well, I've already figured out that he can come back. You don't need to show me.
Yeah. There we go. That answers my question.
That's
Thank
always
you.
The little that little wink to the camera. I'm not dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the way that this character's written.
I mean, it's all there.
It's all built right into it, and it doesn't. You don't need the wink.
Yeah. And even with Tim Matheson's, like, we're recalling all this other stuff, blah, blah, blah. You could have, like, just something like, you just know.
Yeah.
I don't think it's any more or less effective with it or without it, so.
No, I don't think it's any more or less effective, but I was just, I agree with Trisha that it didn't need to be there.
No. Yeah. No. But I was, like I said, I was very pleasantly surprised that this was an effective movie.
Mm-hmm.
And there's room. At this point, Halloween's already proved that there's room for multiple versions of something. And same with Army of Darkness. We wound up getting an Evil Dead remake while Ashen versus the Evil Dead is happening on Stars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's over now, too. But it was a great outing. And it's like, okay, both these universes can coexist. That's great.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's instances where you can have, like, multiple timelines kind of happening where they've done, that's what they've
done
with
Star Trek. It's a good way to move forward, although they wound up getting a voice actor who's almost the same age as Brad Dourif. He's maybe 10 years younger. Maybe. I think they're pretty close in age.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as far as longevity goes, we might have another 20 years in them. The great thing about voice work, you can do that for a very long time. We can pump out a lot of stuff in that time, but at some point there's going to be another actor coming in
at some point. Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then you just, in this version, you can just have, it's the Buddy 2.0 voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why it's different.
Well, the great thing about it, if you do wind up moving exactly, if you wind up possessing a different model, that explains the voice change because it's a voice box change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, easy enough to do.
Yeah, I mean, fucking Siri's changed voices on me already.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You can do it willingly. Cause,
oh, and you can change stuff on GPSs to have different people do voices.
Yeah, well, and mine's Irish, so.
See, that's awesome. I wanted to change mine because, like, the lady just seemed a little bossy for me.
Well, after...
And
after,
there was another lady that was better, so I liked her.
I always liked Tony Stark's Friday, so...
I think they're talking about, like, if you can record enough, you can make your own. which I always wanted to do.
Right.
Just for a friend. And just, you know, surprise them with it in their car and be like, no left, no left, no the other left. Go straight. I'm going to interrupt just because it's annoying.
That's awesome. You should do that.
We should all do that.
But nobody uses GPS anymore because they're built into our phones and they're built into the cars.
Everybody
now
uses GPS, true, just not the GPS devices. Yeah, unless they have an older vehicle.
I know. The dream is gone.
It was a short-lived dream. That GPS that you brought into your car, it was really a short-lived phenomenon. And it was only a couple of years before they were on the phones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it made some more sense on the phones because when I walk places, sometimes I don't know.
It was
where
a good middle ground technology. It was filled a gap at the time that was needed.
Well, I think they were looking to expand on the usage of the backup camera because you needed that screen for something.
Yeah, that's the thing. You would think Chucky has got a GPS in it.
Oh, he must.
He's got, you know, some sort of location services. So. Mm.
Yeah, he must. Of course, nobody would have thought to use it because they didn't know about him until it was too late.
Yeah.
Yeah. But luckily, they were able to patch into his camera, so they knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'd like to see more of that in subsequent movies. Have people witnessing exactly what's happening it's happening.
I wouldn't mind going a whole Terminator level where there's a good Chucky and a bad Chucky.
You know, there's like this new franchise opens up a lot of doors that the original probably couldn't have gone to.
Yeah.
I mean, you can still move more into the techno-horror stuff. Say Caslan sees it as a military opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of places it can go.
Well, so. I mean, that's the other thing, too. When you think about it, if you have Chucky and he's extremely violent but doesn't get it and follows orders unquestioningly, what use could that be in drones? Yeah. A lot of use.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing. The original franchise never really escaped the 80s tropes.
Yeah.
Even though it came out late 80s and well into the 90s and into the 2000s, it really kind of sticks to those 80s type of rules, where this one, it's already just like, it feels so modern, it can move forward.
It's created its own set of rules that makes sense and work.
Yeah. So it's taking care of that datedness of the tropes. I won't say like Chucky feels dated. I've always enjoyed Chucky, but there are certain rules and when I think of just slashers in general, there's a reason why we don't see it very often is because there's nowhere left to go. There's not a lot of new territory left there to hit. So,
on those rare occasions where somebody does, it gets done to death.
Yeah, I love that we're in this renaissance of horror that forces these older franchises to get more creative and think outside the box of how to move forward, because otherwise they're just going to get left behind as these relics. I mean, relics of pop culture, they'll always be in our memories, but if they can't think a way to move past it, and Jason is very problematic. Freddy's a little more open because he's got more personality he can do stuff with.
But it's ultimately, I think this one just lent itself to moving forward in this way. Like it's very clear that you could easily do this. Like the way Chucky is created can be created now. So it doesn't have to move forward. It just has to be here.
Yeah.
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 That's what it is.
And for a young crew of writers and filmmakers to pull something this solid.
It's pretty elaborate.
Out of a pretty old franchise at this point. Well done, guys.
Yes.
Well done.
Very well
done. This is what we kind of look for in remakes.
You listen, don't you? You've heard us tell you what you need to do.
You brought it in, ratcheted it up, made the changes that need to be changed, fixed some holes, some big holes.
And there was a big shoes to fill, too.
Yeah.
Well, very big shoes. Little shoes. But
little tiny toddler shoes.
Big legacy.
A big legacy, yeah.
little shoes,
it's not
big
the size of the
guys.
Feet. Yeah.
T-shirt.
Little shoes, big overalls?
Yeah, there you go. All right, well, we're not done talking about horror this month. It is all the horror month, all month long here on Invasion the Remake, but not just here, right,
Sam? No, not just here. No. You need, I say need, to be following All the Horror 18 on Twitter and or on the Facebook group All the Horror, because there is fresh content every single day. There's a featured podcast along with bonus podcasts. There's also now we have some stuff up from our artists. We have stuff up from our writers. We have a blog post that's going up every day. There's a new blog post from one of our writers. So there's so much great horror content there, and you really do need to be paying attention.
That's right. So it's not too late. And if you haven't caught on already, you can always back check those posts and see which podcasts are dropping and catch up on all the horror and all the fun that happens in October.
And buy a damn t-shirt.
And yes, buy a t-shirt. Those t-shirts go to support Scares That Care. So support some children in need. And where can they buy one of those shirts? Six designs, I hear.
Six designs. Yes. And yes, you can go to the All the Horror site, which is allthehorror18.wix/events, I believe. If not, it's on the Twitter page and on the...
Or go to TeePublic and just search out All the Horror.
As one word.
Mm-hmm.
All the Horror as one word.
They're lovely quality shirts, too.
Yes, and yeah, they're all proceeds are going to Scares That Care.
There you go. So help some children in need and get a really cool shirt to adorn your chest.
Okay.
Before we stab you in it.
They do make
well, me where do you wear your shirts, Trish?
I wear them on my... body. The back is covered too. It just
but the cool image is on your chest, is it not?
It is on my chest.
Okay.
And trust me, that's what a lot of people try to get away with when they talk to me. But sometimes it's lower than the chest and maybe you're missing the whole point. This is why the catchphrases need to be on the belly so you can catch people.
But catchphrases catch people, well done.
Catchphrases there catch people. But yeah, no, you're right. You want something that will look well after you've been stabbed. I mean, like, who wants a bad police photograph? Nobody.
Yeah, exactly. We've got lots of horror still to go here on Invasion of the Remake as well. We got one more for you this month, and then we're going to get into our 31 Days of Horror coverage. Yep, we've been watching 31 horrors over 31 days of October, every one of them we've never seen before, so we get to share our experiences with you over a couple episodes beginning in November.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
We are powering through a lot of horror.
Yes. That's right. And if you want sneak previews, follow Jay on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm at jbishop616.
Or me, StepSamS, on Twitter. And yeah, we're posting every day what we're watching. We're not telling you how we felt about them so much, but we are definitely letting you know what we're watching.
That's right. Otherwise, why would you listen to us? So I'm going to say, tell you what I'm watching, but if you want to know how I felt about it and what my review is, you're going to have to pop on over and listen to those episodes of me, Sam, and Trish.
And I'm the surprise box. Nobody knows anything.
That's because you don't like social media.
I'm not a social media.
You're an anti-social media.
I am anti-social media. But that sounds like I'm just the aunt of social media.
Well.
Hello, anti-social media.
That explains why you pinch my cheeks every time you see me.
Ooh. Yeah, but there's something on your cheek. Just wait.
No, don't do it. Don't, no.
Just come
not,
here.
Not the lick
come
wipe.
Come here.
I don't want the lick wipe.
Ew.
I got it. Finally. You squirm so much when I do that.
I'm squirming just thinking about you doing it.
Anti-social media.
Oh, the places you'll go. Oh, the places you'll go.
Sam theme song.
Hi, Loop Leo. The places you'll go.
Well, if you've been liking the horror coverage we've been doing this month, we've done it for the last few years, so there's lots of stuff in our back catalog. And you got friends who like horror or just like to talk about movies, then share out the podcast, share them with your friends, your family, your family's pet. Just make sure they're subscribed to whatever podcatcher you're listening to. We're on a ton of different places, and you can find a link on our link tree, which is on our social media, and that'll take you to all sorts of places that I'm sure you'll find one that best fits you. At Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and invasiontheremake@gmail.com. And you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Blueberry, iHeartRadio, Radio Public, and so many more, even
freaking YouTube.
So no excuses. We're everywhere. And we're working on getting into even more sources, hopefully for the new year or even before. So we're gonna start branching out, and hopefully we'll be hitting Spotify soon.
Nice.
But there's some tweaking to some of the older episodes before it gets up there.
Yeah.
Yep.
So if you want to hit us, hit the back catalog and get the episode, those original, especially those first 50 in their original form, I suggest you get in there and start downloading them or listening to them now, because they're going to be re-edited for next year.
You can listen to us on our Bambi legs as we figure this thing out.
Yeah, they were shaky.
Yeah.
It took
there was some
while.
Shaky.
Yeah.
There was
I'd say the first 10 were shaky, and it just got steadily better from 11 on.
Yeah, yeah. There was
really good from about 41 on.
I don't know. So there was a couple of shaky ones at the start when you showed up. But that was a new dynamic we had to get used to. Yeah.
It happens when you recast, man. It happens when you recast.
Yeah.
You're part of the reboot, and it's now going well.
All right. Any last thoughts about Child's Play?
Just if you haven't seen the remake, do it. I mean, we've given away a lot already, but it's still worth seeing. It's maybe didn't get the love it should have gotten.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to say, I think that if they had made this movie without branding it as a Child's Play movie, it would have gotten rave reviews.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I didn't look at a lot of the reviews. I mean, the ratings on these were pretty close.
They're similar.
IMDb for the original film is 6.6 out of 10, and the remake is 5.9 out of 10.
So it's not terrible.
Which I think is a little harsh, to be honest.
Yeah.
And Rotten Tomatoes scores the original 67% critic score with a 63% audience score.
Mm.
And the remake is a 64% review score and a 57% audience score.
And I think the critics felt the same way that I did, is if you had branded it as Child's Play, there you wouldn't be making that comparison in your head. Mm-hmm. And not everybody's as analytical as we are about them, mm-hmm. right? And a lot of people want to see what they remember.
They want to see it done again.
Yeah.
Well, that's just a mistake.
And we always see a bit of a dip, regardless of how good a remake is, just because the nostalgia meter just affects things.
Yes. And honestly, I think sometimes people just pop in and review it even without seeing it, because they're like, the best one's better.
Yeah, I feel like they're sit pretty much on equal level.
I would agree. I was just saying that, if they hadn't have branded it as Child's Play, I think it would have gotten a different reaction.
If they were sitting in the park on a seesaw with each other, the seesaw wouldn't move.
Yeah.
It would be the most boring trip to the park, but a great a great movie.
The kids would be on it like they didn't like Bob's Burgers. This seesaw's broken.
Yeah. Well, it's because the dolls have little legs and don't have enough power to push it up.
As I nod, you can't see me nodding.
No.
We can feel it.
I don't know. Most of your other joints make noise. We probably could have heard it.
Possibly, yeah.
It's so ironic how old we are watching a movie called Child's Play.
Well, when I think about when I saw the original film, I probably would have been about the same age as Andy in the remake.
That's about me, too.
Yeah.
I've already told you that I was about to see it in the theater, so.
Yeah,
well, you're old. You're an old man.
Not that much older. It's we're in that cusp area where in that area of time we seemed so much younger, but in actual years, not that much younger.
I mean, you're about 3 years from what my age would have been. I would have been able to drink and drive. So, not at the same time.
Yeah, no.
But maybe, you know, have a driver's license so I could
add in a vote and sign up for the military just to really expand it out.
And vote, yes. All those things.
Yes.
So it's amazing how much things change in 3 years.
It really is, yeah.
Ah, puberty. Anyway.
All right. Well, I think that was it for Child's Play. It was great to visit an 80s classic and one of my faves. And it's a good one to end the comparisons of October with. We got one more remake for you because it's a 5 week month and it's going to be a weird one. I've never seen it before, so it'll be
be on the 31 Days of Horror list for I think at least two of us, probably three of us.
Yeah,
I think so maybe.
Yeah.
So
and
next
it's a big one. It's a big one for me. I'm so excited.
You're really excited.
I am really excited.
I'm hoping the audience will too. They're going
to
be like, huh? But it's an easy film to acquire. So
yeah. Well, I was telling some of our guests. Content providers, and they're like, what is that? And then they're like, they all go to Wikipedia, and I mean, it's like, oh, I still want to see this.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll catch you next week for some more horror, because it's all the horror month on Invasion of the Remake. I've been Jason.
I am always Sam.
And I continue to be Trish.
And we are out of here.
Friends to the end, remember?
This is the end, friend.